Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting The Next Step with Father Vazquez. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Vazquez brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
What is going on? Isn't it supposed to tone down? Isn't that the whole idea of Lent? Isn't it supposed to be a period of bare minimum, take it easy, reflective time? What is going on? Here it is Thursday night, and we're running up against the clock trying to get this podcast out because we've got, an incredible week behind us and another few days coming up in front of us. And, I don't feel like it's Lent, but hey, welcome. Welcome to the first one for 2020, the first Lenten podcast that we're doing, The Next Step. Yes, this I know. There's some of you that are going to say, oh, that's right, it was Ash Wednesday yesterday. No. We go back to last Monday where we started off the Lenten season, kicked it off, and I want to welcome you and hope your Lenten season's going good. And I can't tell you that mine is going bad. It's just packed. And I'm wondering, like, wow, for a period of time that's supposed to be reflective and slowing down, it's quite the opposite. And it was a little bit more intense today because a very close friend of mine passed away. He succumbed to that horrible disease, cancer. And it was a bad one the last few months. But he's at peace and he's at rest. I had a good fortune of knowing him for the last 40 years, almost 40 years. He was on my building committee back in St. Andrew in Cupertino. And, you know, you learn a lot when you're building a church with someone. Building a church is quite different than anything else you might imagine. It's different than a building, an institution like a hospital or office buildings. It's different than building even a house, different than building, you know, infrastructure, and then laying down concrete. No, it's really something not about the building as much as about faith. Because you see, when you do your house, you build a house or you buy a house, there are certain criteria that you have to meet, right? You have to have credit. You have to have money. If you don't have money, you have to have the credit. You have to have, collateral, and you have to put a lot of stuff up. When you're building a church, it's not built like that. There's so many things that you wouldn't even think about. For instance, you need money to build it. Obviously, you got to pay somebody to build it. Where are you going to get that money from? And if the people don't give the money, you've got to get a loan. Well, guess what? Banks do not want to lend money to churches. Did you know that? Yeah. I learned this very early in the game. This was 1986, 87, when we were just starting off with the idea of building the St. Andrew Church. And we walked into one of the banks to talk about a loan. Not apply, but just to see what possibilities there are for a loan. And I never forget this. The bank president, he was sitting across from us and he says, we really don't like to lend to churches. And I'll show you why. And he reached into his drawer and he pulled out a newspaper, the headline of which said, Bank Forecloses on God. He says, this is why we don't like to lend to churches. He says, the PR is horrible. He says, what are we supposed to do when you can't pay? We foreclose on a church? Do you know what kind of PR that is? And there he is. He had that proof right there, you know? So you've got to kind of come up with an idea of how you're going to pay for it. And it's really the only idea that you can do is on faith. You have to have enough faith to build it. that, you know, people are going to get together. They're going to put down money. They're going to share that dream that you have. They're going to want to build it for some reason that is bigger than themselves. And this man, Tony is his name, he would, in our group of five or six building committee, and I was the priest, very young priest at the time, he was the one in our group that would be very optimistic, very positive, in the sense that don't worry about it, it'll happen, it'll come, we're going to make it. And we had the good fortune of enjoying a friendship with him for the past 38 years. And God rest his soul and grant comfort to his family. I wanted to just start off with that small little piece because I just came from the house and everything's kind of backed up, which, you know, it's okay. During Lent, it's okay. You need a time where you can sort things out. Well, I'm getting my dose of it. Yesterday was Ash Wednesday, yes, but it was the first Wednesday of Lent. And at the diocese, we had a morning service with the ladies' prayer day. And I got to tell you, I really enjoyed this session that we did, along with Father Rajag over there at the diocese. I presented the vestments of the Armenian Church. And I, you know what? Just doing the research for it made me, it was fulfilling just doing the research for it. Because it had been a long time since seminary, since you read about these things and reading about the vestments and then going through each of the prayers and sharing that. And I know I have a video that's up there. I think the video, when I compare it to what I did yesterday, the video is more Sunday schoolish. I mean, it's a good overview of the vestments, whereas yesterday was a little bit more spiritual, mystical. And in fact, I was so excited about it and got so many comments about it that I want to see if I could put it together in some form. I don't know if it'll come out as a video or if we'll put it in a form of a book and maybe publish it, do something with it. But it was fascinating because it reminds you that our liturgy, our divine liturgy, the Holy Badarak, is based on this mystical idea that we are connecting human beings with the divine. And so in expressing and explaining about the vestments, people saw those vestments and heard the prayers and the reasons for them, you realize that there is a transformation that takes place every Sunday in front of us. And unless you understand these nuances, you really don't get the full flavor of what's happening. Like you come into church and you see the priest is already vested. And most times people come to church when it's already pretty late. And even if you are in the back rooms during the vesting, you don't really appreciate all the prayers, all the meanings that go into those vestments. It's the transformation of the sinful self to do the work of God. And like I said, it was very, very moving. And then in the evening, I was, they call it Badgama Per. I like that word. it's a little more classy than the guy who gives the sermon. Badgam means the message, Per to bring the message. I'm the message bringer. I like that. So for the next 6 weeks, I'm doing during the Wednesdays of Lent, I'm doing these messages. And this year I've decided that the theme will be simple words. Simple words that we use, and you never really think about them, do you? Like, for instance, Amen. You say Amen at the end of every prayer. What does that mean? You use the word sin. I have sinned against God. What does that sin mean? We use words like to forgive. Forgive us our trespasses. What's the extent of forgive? Does it imply forgetting? So it's a six-week session of talking about these very simple words that we use often and often, and all too often, because we use them so often, they lose their meaning. His Holiness Katekin the First of Blessed Memory makes a very good point, and he calls it mechanical praying. In one of his sermons, he talks about how often we build a contempt for the prayers because they become mechanical. We don't take time to think about it. And think about just a simple prayer like the Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come. So often we just recite it. And as the Catholicos says, it becomes mechanical rather than us taking the time and thinking about each and every word. So I gave a session on that, and let's see, the week has been, we were up in Oakland last weekend, in San Jose on Saturday night, wonderful. We were at St. Andrew, and it was just, they honored Father Datev Harutyunyan, and 20 years as the priest of that church, 30 years in the priesthood. Ordination, those anniversaries, double anniversaries. It was wonderful. But I got to tell you, the most moving part for me was his son, Deacon Dikran, got up and he shared a beautiful message. And I am trying my best. I'm going to try to get a copy of that message. And I want to share it with you, our listeners, because it was really very, very, very touching for a priest's son to share that with a congregation, with the people about his father. I was very moved, and I'm sure you will be as well. So it's been an action-packed week, and here we are Thursday night getting ready to put out the next step. And I want to start off this session with something really exciting. It's something that I was taught. Are you ready? Something I learned this week from my grandson. What? 3 months old little Adi teaching me something? Absolutely. Something happened. You're not going to believe this. Little kid teaches me this. Okay, so the first day of Lent, we get this beautiful opportunity to spend a couple hours with him walking, and got him in the stroller, and we're walking. And it is a beautiful, beautiful day here in Pasadena, California. I'm saying that because Pasadena, California conjures up the images of sun, clear skies, and that's the kind of day it was. That was the first day of Lent for us over here. So our daughter-in-law brought over the baby, and we're walking, and it is a beautiful day outside, and we're walking, and a little bit of the sun peers through his stroller top and hits his face. And what does he do? He squints. He closes his eyes. The sun hits his face. He closes his eyes. Yeah, that's it. That's the lesson that I learned. Okay. You know that that's a trick. You know that that's a trick. I'm waiting for you to say, what? What's the lesson there? Well, think about this. What happens? A child is completely the most beautiful and unsynthesized, unprocessed life form that we can see. In other words, they come to us as a gift from God, and they bring to us the bed of heaven. Because they exist in heaven, they come to us. And so now we're seeing what life should be. When the sun hits us, we have a natural mechanism built into us to close our eyes. Yeah. It's natural to close your eyes when the sun hits it. What do we do, though? Well, we want to be able to see in sunlight. So we get dark glasses. We get sunglasses, don't we? We find ways of filtering out the light. We make synthetic light so that we can see at night. That little baby, he's just there. He's doing what comes natural. Light hits his eyes, closes his eyes. So I'm thinking about this as I'm walking him in the stroller. I'm thinking, wow, this is wild. The natural mechanism of life. And this is on the first day of Lent. We're understanding when you go back to make it very simple, right? That's the process of Lent. That's the Lenten journey, to make life very simple. Bring it down to what is essential. Jesus in the wilderness, 40 days fasting, and he's tempted by the tempter who says, if you really are the Son of God, go ahead. I know you're hungry. I know you want some food. Tell these stones to turn into bread and they'll do it. Magic, yeah. Jesus says, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. What is essential in your life? What is it that you need to live? And when you look at a child, at a baby, you understand that in our natural form, we have the mechanism, we come with that built-in mechanism to adapt to our environment. You close your eyes when it's sunny. You open your eyes when it's dark. Yeah. So I started thinking about this. Wow. What else can we do? Well, food. A baby will eat, and when a baby is full, he or she will stop eating. Yep. Had enough. Stop eating. Whoa. Okay, how many of you are now getting what I'm talking about? Of course, we all relate to this, right? We don't. We don't stop eating. We're full, but no, we can put something away. We can have a little bit more. We could take it in. We've lost that natural mechanism, that natural means by which we can survive within our environment. And it's that simple. We had it at childhood, but somehow we lost it. We lost it as we grew older. We started adapting to the ways of the world rather than understanding that we had the mechanism to adapt and to live comfortably in harmony with our environment, with our world, with our universe. And this small little lesson came to me during this little stroller spin. We're walking, and I'm realizing that, you know, in our most natural form as children, we come equipped to do so much. But as life goes on, we start altering ourselves. We start adapting. And a lot of it has to do with peer pressure as well. We know the evil, and yet we willingly give way to it. Why? Why is that? There's things that are beyond us, right? We're under pressure. What will people think? What will they say? What will they think of me? And there's this very, very, very strong influence on all of us. So during this Lenten season, as we are going through it, and now we are, by the time this one is heard, it's going to be day 5. You made it through the first 5 days. Congratulations. Take an opportunity to think about that natural state. What are those natural things that we have forgotten about? When the sun hits our eyes, are we willing to close them, or do we put sunglasses on so that we can still see? When we are eating and we're full, do we continue eating despite the fact that we are full? Or do we say that's enough? And you could take that as a metaphor, and you can take that as a reality too. So much of our lives is because of the conditioning that we have all around us. And we've forgotten what life was meant to be and what it should be. You go to the story of Jesus in the temple. Remember the caravan and the parents? They're moving forward and they realize that they are missing Jesus. Jesus wasn't lost, but they understood that he was not in their life. And they make the trek all the way back to Jerusalem, where they find Jesus right where he's supposed to be. He says, "Why are you astonished? Didn't you know that I would be in my Father's house?" He's in the temple. Well, think about that metaphor in our lives too. Christ is where he should be. He's always been there. What is essential in our lives, the mechanisms of our lives, they're all in place. We need to go back to that position, to that place where we are in our lives, and find that natural state. So much of our lives are conditioned and made up of the rules and regulations that we impose on ourselves as rules and regulations, rather than understanding the natural law that is given to us, that when the sun hits, our eyes should close. I thank my grandson for giving me that one. That was a cool one. It was a nice little awakening that I had on the first day of Lent. I'm going to share with you some other stuff coming up in the second portion of today's show. But I do want to tell you that, you know, we do have this Lenten season, and I want you to take advantage of it. It is such a beautiful time. I have spoken to several people this week who have told me that they appreciate the Lenten Journey series that we have. They appreciate that we have a means or a prescription to follow. And if you haven't checked those out, do check them out. They're on our show notes, The Lenten Journey. Also, if you're on Facebook, the Western Diocese is doing a daily Lenten Journey with little sayings that you can take and use them as prescriptions for life. And I highly recommend that you follow them. It's a small little series that I've produced. And I'd be very, very honored to hear from you, to hear how it's working in your life. There's just so much beauty in the traditions that we have as an Armenian church. And it's really up to us to plug into them. You know, I always say that, you know, it's interesting that these people have survived for so long. It's because they've had such a disciplined system of life. You know, there's eating patterns, there's fasting days. Do you realize that Wednesdays and Fridays throughout the year are called fasting days? And if you think about it, science is just now catching up, where they're saying that, yeah, it's important that it's important that twice a week, once a week, you cleanse or you abstain from eating. Yeah, they're now catching up. Once a year, we abstain from all animal products. Not only do we not eat flesh, all animal products. The milks, the butters, the cheeses. Well, what's going to happen? You're clearing out your system. And you're getting just some vegetables and fruits. These are not radical diets. I know people come and say, oh, well, you're going to lose a lot of weight. It's not about losing weight. It's about bringing life down to the bare essentials, what's important, and to clean out, to find that what's important in your life. I'm going to take a break right now. We always do. Every week we play a song of the day. I have picked out something special for this Lenten season. It's my dear and good friend, Gor Mkhitaryan. Hope you enjoy.
Չի դարձել անձրև նոմպերի ետևից Դեր չի կոտրվել թասը ոսկե երկերի Ունայնություն, ունայնության ամեն բան ունայն է Ունայնության ասե ժողովողը חבלי מתכס פויצה ערב לוסים ויצ'י דרצל הור ישקלים רוקים ישקלים אולי נוצ'ון אולי נוצ'ן אמן בן אולי נב אולי נוצ'ון אולי נוצ'ן נעשה ג'ור עבור
Gor Mkhitaryan, off of the Spirit album, that is a song called Unai Nutyun, Vanity. I thought it was an appropriate way to kick off the Lenten season. Vanity, isn't that the thing that you need to just dump? That's the actual thing that you got to get rid of. It plays in with ego, and you know, once you got the ego in play, you got some big problems. Case in point, look at your world right now. Look at politics. Look at what's going on. Unai Nutyun, Vanity. That is off of the Spirit album, an album that we're just so proud of. Back in 2008, we co-produced it with the artist Gor Mkhitaryan, and it was an opportunity really to put together some spiritual music for the new day. And I think we accomplished that on many, many levels. I think it is one of those albums that is probably underrated because of its spiritual content. It is just some fantastic music, and I'm always excited to play some of it for you, our listeners. Unai Nutyun off of the Spirit album. I'll have a link on today's show notes. Talk about artificial intelligence for the second portion of the show. A wonderful article that was sent to me, and I want to share it with you because I think it brings up a lot of points that sometimes go unnoticed. I know it's a bit eclectic, it's a bit out there, a little bit off of the mainstream of what we usually do on The Next Step, but that's okay because we are The Next Step, right? This is about artificial intelligence. The Pontifical Academy of Life will seek the good algorithm. Now, you know, so much of what we do in life is controlled by computers that we take it as second nature. I remember in the 80s when personal computing. Now, computing has really been around for ages. I mean, from the abacus, that's a primitive computer that was used by the Chinese. There were some digits in there. There was binary systems that were used. But really, the modern computing age came around the 50s and the 60s of the last century when scientists started using it, and especially in military areas. But the personal computer came about in the late 70s. And it was really Apple Computer and IBM and these mainstream, these big, big corporations. Well, Apple was a tiny little corporation at the time. Actually, I remember I was there in Cupertino. has a couple little houses, a couple little bungalows, Apple Computer. They came out with these cool computers that had a mystique to them. And you used them, and you got work done. Personal computers. Well, we found out that computers can also think. And, you know, there was a saying in early days of computer when we were doing programming, garbage in, garbage out. And this was just a common saying we'd say because a lot of times your computer would fail to do what you thought it could do. And, well, the computer is only as smart as the programmer. So if you're going to put garbage in it, guess what? You're going to get garbage out of that computer because it really doesn't have a brain. This computer cannot think. It's just a bunch of ones and zeros that are passing through, that are getting electrified, that are put into some codes, and you see something on a two-dimensional screen, and it comes out at you. And you go, oh, wow. Now, that being said, computers have changed. And computers are now starting to think. Interesting, huh? Not just knowledge. Now, I don't know how old you are. If you're old enough to know to think about this, you remember that there was a time, I'd say maybe about 20, 30 years ago, where they'd say that knowledge is power. That in old days, power was with the people who had the weapons, but the greatest weapon was knowledge. And so schools, institutions of learning came out and they would pass along knowledge. Okay? What's 2 times 2? Well, you need knowledge to know that, you know, I have 2 and 2. There's 2 times that 2. And, you know, you put it together and you got 4. What is the capital of Armenia? Yerevan. That's a bit of knowledge. That's a bit of information that you're taking and you have it. Now, what's interesting is we used to say knowledge is power, but not anymore, are we? Because if you really want knowledge or information, right, you want to know what 2 plus 2 is, you want information, the capital of a country, you've got Google, right? It's a powerhouse. It's right there. You've got Alexa. You can ask Alexa. Hey, Siri. What is the capital of Armenia?
Yerevan is the capital of Armenia.
Thank you. You see? That's it. It's there. It's literally at our fingertips. And because it is, it means that, no, that's not the extent of power. Power isn't in that knowledge. But where is that power? The power is in the ability to process that. What we used to call the imagination. And I say used to call because I think this is where we're going right now. It's like, imagine if we can create imagination. Albert Einstein, think about this. Okay, when you think about knowledge, you think about the most knowledgeable of these men, Albert Einstein. What did he say? Imagination is more important than knowledge. For knowledge is limited to all we now know and understand, while imagination embraces the entire world and all there ever will be to know and understand. Albert Einstein. Imagination. Now imagine if you can, that there's a way of creating that imagination. I mean, what I'm asking is that something that's uniquely human? I thought it was. I think it is. I think that we have that ability. When it says we are created in the image of God, what does that mean? We have the ability to create. Yes, we have the ability to create physically through procreation, but we also have the ability to create our destinies, to create our worlds. And one of the lessons that we learn during the Lenten season, especially because this coming Sunday is called Expulsion Sunday, is the idea that, yes, we are responsible for the world, what happens, and therefore, if you create the world in the way you are moving, you have to also be accountable. You have to take on responsibility for what you have created. And this is just by definition, right? If you do something, you take responsibility if you're doing it of your own free will. The minute you take free will out and you say, I'm destined to do it, then you're no longer accountable for it, right? Because somebody has programmed you, much like these computers. Are they responsible for their life? No. Garbage coming out means somebody put garbage in. Now we are at a different place in life, though. Computers are learning. They are learning and accumulating knowledge, and once they have that knowledge, to be able to process that knowledge. Now again, it takes a programmer to put that in. But imagine now we have put programs in to the point, and because computing power has gotten to a point where we can do this now, the programmer himself says, take this information that you have received and start processing it along these lines, so that you can now create, or you can rationalize, and you can take steps. What we call algorithms. In other words, there are certain numbers and certain formulas that can be put in place that will mimic that free will experience. In other words, that computer will have, it will look like, it will seem like the computer is thinking on its own. And the early ones were basic computer games, right? Computer games. Did you ever play, Pac-Man? You know? Pac-Man, because there's so much activity going on the screen. This is like, 1980s? Very basic Atari computer game. So much activity that there's the little Pac-Man chomping away at the little dots, and you got the ghosts running up and down and everything. So much activity that you would think that, oh, this is wild. These ghosts are after me and they're coming. Actually, it was just a very simple program. And how would you win Pac-Man? Once you realized, or once you understood the formula, you saw that there were patterns. You saw that the ghost took this pattern, took that pattern, and you eventually understood that if you could know where the ghosts are going, you could stay away from them. And so you start building your own system of winning these games. Very easy. That's 1980s, okay? But now what they've done is they've gotten the computers to start looking at their own formulas. And just like the human being who looks at it and says, okay, I know that the Pac-Man is going to take this route, the computer now realizes, okay, I know the ghost is going to take this route, and therefore the Pac-Man should go in this way. And we had the second level of games. We had games like chess. Chess. Where you have computers, your desktop computer, you have it on your app, you can play against the computer a game of chess. And they're very strong. How do they do it? Well, one way could be that they've put in every combination of chess move that has ever existed. And certainly now we have the memory, we have the hard drives that could contain every single chess game that could ever be imagined or played. And so you would say that if they make this move, you do this move, right? That's one way. And as long as you have the patience to code in all that, as long as you have the ability to figure out all the games, I think just the idea that would probably take a couple thousand years to put in all those games. So what they came up with is algorithms. In other words, formulas, so that we know that if the king moves here, the queen can move here. And if the rook is going to go in a straight direction forward, it can connect and it could do this. And the whole idea is to put the king in, of the other opponent in check. And so now the computer starts looking like it's thinking. Okay, the algorithms. Now we've gotten to the point where there is so much memory involved in these computers that it actually is thinking on its own. It's mimicking the thinking process that human beings, that set human beings apart from computers. Have you ever signed up for something online? And what do you get? You get that small little test that says, I am not a computer. Right? You have to say, I am not a computer. And then it gives you a small test. It shows you a picture and it says, how many cars are in here? Or can you find the signals? Or something like that, right? And you look and you see the picture. Well, why? Because only a human being can process that information. It's a blurry picture, and a human being can make out that there's a few things that look like signals. A computer, like it or not, could probably do the same, and they probably do. But for the most part, we're at a point where that would be adequate for us to say, I am not a computer. But we are at that point where now computers are processing the information above and beyond and about themselves. And in so doing, they're creating their own little system of discovery, of knowledge, and implementing that knowledge. And so you've got some very complicated chess games that can be played on the computer. Just a few years ago, remember the IBM computer called Watson. Do you remember that? Watson played the game Jeopardy, arguably one of the most sophisticated and one of the most difficult games there are. Jeopardy, because not only do you have to come up with the answer, you have to put it in the form of a question. And you have to do it pretty quick because you have to be able to chime in. And we saw that Watson was able to play this incredibly difficult game with so many different variables, and it could do it. It didn't need to keep track of all of those answers. What it did need was an algorithm that it could follow, and in so doing, it could get out there and make the most money. And really, that's what happened. We watched this Watson just accumulate more and more money because it was knowledge. And it was the implementation of that knowledge which this computer had developed and learned by looking at itself and looking at the results of hundreds of thousands of calculations. So, all this as a preface to let you know what's going on right now. Basically, we've got machines that appear to think. And as we move forward, and as there's more of memory available, we're getting to a point where machines are making decisions. And with those decisions, listen to this, okay? You're saying, why are we talking about machines? No, it's not about machines. It's about faith. It's exactly what we've been talking about during the Lenten season, and we come to the Sunday of Expulsion. This Sunday of Expulsion is about Adam and Eve being expelled from paradise. And if you want to believe that this is about a myth about two people, you're free to believe whatever you want. If you want to take it literally, you want to take it mythically, you're free to believe whatever you want. What I'm sharing with you is the entire idea that Adam and Eve is about humanity. Adam, Adam means man, Eve means woman, and it's a story about God creating life. Okay, can you buy into that? Yeah. And in return, we as people, created in the image of God, want our will to be done. And at the end of the day, it's our will which causes the problems, which expel us from paradise, from that situation where we wear sunglasses instead of closing our eyes, right? That's a small little decision we make but it's a decision nonetheless. And you've decided that it's more important to be able to see in that bright sunlight than to close your eyes. We have decided that it's more important to continue eating rather than stop when we are full. We have decided that it is more important to pollute our environment with carcinogens than to seek safer solutions for building, for moving forward, for dealing with issues of our environment and our climate. We have decided that, despite what God says, it's okay for us to hurt other people, so long as we do it first and they don't do it to us. And there's all these rules that we set up, which is fine, as long as we are willing to take the responsibility for our actions. See, what we were saying earlier, garbage in, garbage out means that there's no responsibility. I put garbage in, so I'm supposed to expect garbage out of that computer. But once you start thinking and you start making those decisions, you have to be held accountable for it. No one else. Did I eat more when I was full? Did I continue smoking? Did I pollute my environment? Questions. And so with that, imagine now with computers, with artificial intelligence, who is going to take the blames? Where is the ethics? Where it's involved? So this appeared. And I'm going to leave you with this because it's beautiful. I will have it on our show notes, but I want to just share it with you because there's some incredible ideas that have to be asked. And the Lenten season, as much as it's important for us, it's also important collectively as a society for us to be thinking about these things. This appears in, it's an online magazine, I believe, called Zenit. And signing of appeals for ethics. From February 26th to 28th, 2020, the Pontifical Academy for Life will dedicate its annual assembly to artificial intelligence in three realms: ethics, law, and health. This is the pontifical. We're talking about the Pope. Okay, the Pope's Academy for Life, okay? It's looking at what? Artificial intelligence in three realms: ethics, law, and health. Just sharing this with you because I took a long way around, but I wanted to make the point that these are things that we saw on the horizon. This was going to happen, and now it's come about. The Good Algorithm Workshop was presented this morning in the Holy See Press office. Taking part in the presentation of the event on Tuesday, February 25th, were Monsignor, and it goes through the names, I don't need to go through this. Monsignor Pelleglia, president of the Pontifical Academy for Life, pointed out that a strong moral ambition is necessary to humanize technology and not technologize the human. It goes on, and I really honestly wish you would read this. Take some time, and I'd love to hear from you. But here, I'll read the ending. It's important. Artificial intelligence doesn't work to do something specific. It is geared, above all, to changing the way in which we do everything, as happened with electricity, said the Franciscan, referring to the person talking. If we want the machine to support man and the common good without ever substituting the human being, then the logarithms must include ethical, and not only numerical values, pointed out the academic. Basically, we need to be capable of indicating the ethical values through the numerical values that fuel the algorithms, he specified. That's wild, though, okay? I mean, like, basically, you're going to be doing mathematics of ethics, okay? That's what we're talking about. Anyway, let me conclude. The Italian priest offered another premise. Ethics needs to contaminate computation, adding that we need algorithms, namely a way of making computable the good and bad evaluations. There you have it, okay? There you have it. You need to basically come up with formulas to add ethics to the algorithms. Only thus will we be able to create machines that can become instruments of humanization of the world, he concluded. Ah, this is fascinating. Very fascinating. Anyway, I wanted to just share this with you because to me, this is where I think this is the new Star Wars for me. This is the Star Wars of religious life. We talk about so many things, but you know where we're going, where we're headed, and most everything is controlled by these programs. Whether it's a handheld app on your phone, it's some supercomputer, it's your desktop, it's your laptop, whatever it is, whether it's your refrigerator or your car. And just think about it. Right now, we've got self-driving cars. They just pulled over a guy the other day who was sleeping. Yeah, he had programmed his car to drive. So he was sleeping. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And it changes the way you think about this, okay? Think about something as simple as a self-driving car. How that's going to change the way we live. Imagine if you've got a self-driving car, you don't need to worry about parking anymore, right? Parking lots are going to be obsolete because basically you can get dropped off at your appointment and program your car to go outside of the area. It doesn't have to sit in downtown. You go 10 blocks down and stay idle. Can turn off until you call and then bring it back in. You don't need this congestion. Think about it. I mean, basically, little simple things that things are going to be changing. And I think that we as a church need to understand that, you know, the ethical values that have to be part of these algorithms. It's not just a question of programming ethics, but finding the computations that make these possible. Just like a chess game, which came out of or followed the very simple first little projects of playing Pong or Pac-Man, and eventually you start developing on this. And, you know, we're seeing it. We're seeing it unfold in front of our eyes. And we've got a brave new world ahead of us. And it's going to be up to us to be able to reason with it, to think with it, to live with it, but most importantly, not to fear it. It is part of life that is moving forward. That's quite a bit for today, okay? Let's take a break right now, especially since the piano mover moved the piano into this crowded studio, and it is very late at night, and the piano player is playing beautifully, so let's take a break. Here's Susie. I'll be back in a couple moments.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
And I want to add my thanks to all of you for all of your love, affection, your support of this ministry. I mean, I really received some very heartwarming letters this week that really they I want you to know that they really boost me and they keep me moving forward. So thank you and God bless you all. Listen, we've got a few things going on. We are the first week of Lent. I want to really encourage you to get involved at an Armenian church that's close by to you. And if you can't, you can join with us on the net. We'll have a link on today's show notes to the Lenten journey. Do take advantage of these courses that we put on. I am writing the one for the Western Diocese as we go. So if you're on Facebook, you can look at it. Maybe we can, if for those of you not on Facebook. Actually, I tried to stay off of Facebook for a few weeks. It's kind of difficult because it's really connected to the ministry and to so many aspects of the ministry. So, you know, I basically got rid of my personal self on Facebook, and it's basically the ministry. But here's where the catch is. We've got to somehow develop this a little bit more, and it's lacking just power, manpower right now, and time power. So didn't we talk about that earlier? What is power? It's imagination. That's what it is. Ooh, you got me there. You got me there. Hey, listen, this Sunday I'm going to be at the Oakland St. Vartan Church. Following Sunday I'm going to be out in Phoenix, Arizona. And the following Sunday is Reclaim. And actually the 2 days before, the Friday the 13th and the 14th Saturday, are two incredible days where we talk about reclaiming the Armenian Church as our own, reclaiming especially Etchmiadzin. That's the theme of this year. I want to invite you out to Burbank, California. I'll have a link on today's show notes. If you're not into links, then just type in embracing-faith.com. And we'll make you get into links that way. And check out all the wonderful programming that we have. Hey, listen, keep me in your prayers. Keep this ministry in your prayers. And I'll do the same for you. I want to thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. Of course, we'd love to hear from you. We're at feedback@epostle.net. Really easy to remember. That's Apostle with an E, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. And of course, at all the socials. Hey, listen, on behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I'm top minutes.